All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Well, hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist perspective. And tonight is a Halloween episode, so I'm wearing my scary caterpillar on my face costume tonight so I can get all the candy and other goodies that I am probably just going to throw in the trash. Like, that's the proper way to eat candy corn, by the way. Open the bag, deposit it in the trash, and then go eat a Reese's. Anyway, this is episode 258 of the show. You can find the show notes more at actualanarchy.com/258. And before we get into the last night of sports show, we'll introduce our guest, returning guest, and excellent guest. Let's say hello to Robert, who is on the east side. Are you doing any trick and or treating coming up?
Trick or treating at my age.
That's the thing. That's the thing that goes on around this time
of year. Adults do this? Because I remember it was lame if you were in high school doing it. I think middle school was the cutoff. If you were even seventh or eighth grade, if you're still doing it, you're like super lame. But I think if you had younger brothers or sisters to take along with you, then you could like say that, oh, I'm just going along with them. And then you could get away with it. But
right. So we've established it's super lame. So I'll repeat my question. When are you going?
You know, you wouldn't want to trick or treat in my neighborhood. People are wearing costumes all year round around here. It's that scary.
All right. I know that around my neighborhood, I don't want to go trick or treating. There's like a nice town down the way that I think we would have better luck at. And, you know, instead of like getting meth, like we would get in our neighborhood, we would actually get candy.
So you're going to be one of those dads that drives around their kids in a minivan, stops in front of each house. Then they get the kid out, and then you supervise the kid as he walks up to the front door, and then you just like helicopter that entire situation.
I'm going to be wearing Kirkland signature jeans and white tennis shoes, and I'm going to inspect those apples for razor blades and also divvy out the candy in like rationed amounts.
Daniel, have you ever heard of the theory of natural selection? It's the process by which nature sorts out the wheat from the chaff.
This sounds like dangerous misinformation.
Daniel, you can't let these weaklings survive. At some point, something's got to get them. If they're going to be, they got to be tough to live in this world, Daniel. We can't have all these millennials running around that have just had all the obstacles bulldozed in front of them by their parents. You have to let these kids learn to do some things and establish an ability to sense danger and take care of themselves.
Or we need more Rose the Hats psychic vampires like from last week's Dr. Sleep.
Listen, I wouldn't be against it. I wouldn't be. I also wouldn't be against more people killing the Rose the Hats, but just an overall, a little bit more, you know, everybody's sense of danger is all thrown off. Like, it's perfectly safe to trick or treat for the most part, like 99.99% of all kids that go out trick or treating come back and they're just fine. And there's no razor blades in their candy. But yet the same percentage of people of kids are dying from COVID and people are freaking out, putting them in masks, social distancing them, not letting them go to school or whatever. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. So the point is the statement in and of itself.
The point is, Daniel, that everybody's risk assessment is all out of whack with the news constantly reporting all kinds of horrible things. Like if there's a murder in North Carolina, everybody's like, oh no, there's murders everywhere. I can't let my kids go outside. They're going to get murdered.
Yeah.
Oh no, there's a COVID case in Seattle. So I got to stay inside forever. It's just insane.
No, I don't disagree with you there. And I think that it has shifted the perception of what it means to be a kid and to have a kid. Like, we used to run around 10 years old, all around town. We went wherever we wanted. It was no big deal. Now, if you see a couple of kids out in a neighborhood, you're like, where's their parents? What the fuck, man? What's going on? Are they in trouble? Do they need help?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't understand the shift in psychology other than that it seems like the world is a much more dangerous place when in reality it's about the same as it was 40 years ago.
I'd settle for what it was 2 years ago. That would be a big improvement.
It's the same, Daniel.
Maybe where you are, my friend. Maybe where you are. But anyway, we got to get to the last airports of the show. We can continue this discussion in the post-show bonus content, if you so desire. And people can get a piece of that at actualanarchy.com/Patreon. And we're going to get into the last airports of the show right after these messages. Hey everyone, it's Daniel Elwood and Robert Paul Johnson. We are the Last Nighters. You can find us at lastnighters.com and also at the YouTube for the Liberty Movement. Liberty Movement's YouTube channel, that's right. Anyway, you can find the show notes more for this episode of John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness at lastnighters.com/201. And returning to the show for the umpteenth time, it's at least the third, maybe the fourth time, is Prof. CJ of the Dangerous History Podcast. He was last on just in July, which doesn't seem all that long ago, but welcome back, Prof. CJ. Why don't you just remind people what you do and where they can find it, and we'll get underway.
Yeah, sure thing. My show is the Dangerous History Podcast, and it is a history podcast done by a guy whose main influences intellectually would be Rothbard, Spooner, John Carpenter, and George Carlin. So if that sounds like the version of history you'd like to hear, then check out my show, DangerousHistoryPodcast.com. Wherever you consume your podcast, it's there too.
Right. And it's for all of your Wilson-hating needs and more than you'd ever want to know.
Hard at work on the latest Wilson episode. I think I'm on part 9, if I remember right, of Woodrow Wilson. And we're only getting into his second year in the White House. So there's still much more horrific things to come.
Yeah. Now, are you finding that this level of deep diving and only getting to the second year at this point, are you finding that this project is resonating and getting traction? Like, are you compelled to continue? Is it doing well for you? And are you enjoying it?
Yeah, honestly, I'd be tempted to throw in the towel because it is a huge undertaking. It is comparable in terms of the amount of time and effort and research and everything to my Civil War series from a few years back. And by the time I'm done, it might even be worse than the Civil War as far as how much work I'm putting into it. But what really keeps me going are the listeners, because the listeners love it. The Wilson series has been really popular and getting lots of downloads. And, you know, I'm constantly getting feedback from my listeners through email and social media, occasionally meeting people in person. Like I was at the Tom Woods 2000 episode thing. What was it, last nice. Weekend or the weekend before recently? So yeah, met some listeners there in person and all that. And everybody loves to hate Wilson. So I'm there to provide all the material so that you realize that, like, you only think you hate Wilson. You think, oh yeah, Federal Reserve, income tax, World War One, boom, he sucks. It's like, yeah, but there's 10,000 more reasons, large and small, to hate this guy beyond just those that everybody knows.
So there's market demand for Wilson hate. So that's good that you're there to fill that demand.
Everybody loves to hate Wilson.
It sounds like you're going to have so much material. I mean, probably you could do books or whatever out of it. So that's really impressive and encouraging that you are getting traction with something so niche, because I haven't consumed much of it, but you know, I'm more of the, what you just described, like, oh, the three or four really bad things he did makes me think he's the worst president of all time. But really, he's like the linchpin for the state we're in now.
Yeah. And in all my research, I dug up all kinds of things that I didn't even know about before, reasons to hate him. Like, you know, he was a supporter of eugenics. When he was governor of New Jersey, he signed a eugenics bill into law there that was written by a guy who later shows up working for the Nazis many years later. So I mean, who knows that, right?
Gosh, you've been around that long?
Yeah, really. And just another one I found out about recently, Wilson is responsible for giving a very young J. Edgar Hoover his first few major promotions in the Justice Department that put J. Edgar Hoover on the fast track to then, you know, a few years later in the 1920s, becoming head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So there's one more thing you can throw on Woodrow Wilson. Also, by the way, the first major war on drugs law in American history passed under Wilson, the Harrison Narcotics Act of 1914.
Oh, wow. Okay. So all roads lead to Rome and all reasons to hate the state lead to Wilson.
At least if you're an American anyway. And really, let's be fair. If you're a European or a Russian, you know, a lot of his stuff had bad side effects for you, too.
Right. And I think that the foreign policy getting projected out into the world was really a Wilsonian thing.
And Wilson, he was one of these like elite intellectual types, right? At least he thought of himself as one of these intellectual types. And
yeah, well, I mean, he is the only American president still to this day who held a PhD. And before he got into politics, he taught for many years at Princeton and a number of other universities, and then was president of Princeton University for about a decade. So, I mean, he really was, you know, part of the academic establishment.
And he thought he was on a mission from God.
Absolutely.
The technocracy that's everybody is so in love with. If we could just get the smart people in charge, everything would be great.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, speaking of the smart people, let's get into John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness. Now, this is the second film in the Apocalypse series, the first one being one of Robert's favorite movies, The Thing, and the third being Mouth of Madness. And that was another one that was up for bid with you, CJ. And so perhaps we can do that one in the future. I've heard really good things about that one. I haven't seen it, but apparently it's related to a book that is like pivotal to the story, and some of the narration of that book is used in popular culture and in music, in a lot of songs and things. So that might be kind of fun to like see where those things have come from. But how we start off, the old Google description. So Prince of Darkness, 1987, rated R, horror/supernatural film, 1 hour, 42 minutes. It is available for free on Peacock, which is kind of why we picked it. Between the two, Mouth of Madness was the other option. 6.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 58% Rotten Tomatoes, 50% on Metacritic, and 86% of Google users like it. The description is thus: poking around in a church cellar, a priest, played by Donald Pleasance, finds an otherworldly vial filled with slime. Frightened, he brings his discovery to a circle of top scholars and scientists who eventually learn that the strange liquid is the essence of Satan. The slime then begins to seep out, turning some of the academics into zombified killers. As the possessed battle the survivors, student Kelly, played by Susan Blanchard, is infected by a large quantity of the liquid and becomes Satan personified. Release date of October 23rd, 1987, directed by John Carpenter, music by John Carpenter, written by John Carpenter, under the pseudonym of Martin Quatermass, which I guess is a nod to one of his favorite stories or writers. And this is a pretty fun movie. It has a lot of the same folks who were in Big Trouble in Little China, which was kind of fun to see those guys. So, Robert, your opening bid for Prince of Darkness.
Is there better evidence that Google users' reviews are completely useless? They are just a bunch of clapping seals. This I don't understand how this movie has anything to do with The Thing, which is a near masterpiece. This movie, I don't understand how John Carpenter is involved. The Thing is about an extraterrestrial entity that crash lands on Earth and comes into contact with some Antarctic researchers. This movie is about some scientists who are studying some green ooze and get peed on and then end up killing some people. And then there's bad guys sort of, and somebody gets turned into some bugs and a bunch of nonsense. The acting is atrocious. I don't understand if they were just getting people fresh off the bus, like, hey, you want to be in the movies, kid? Just grab them off the street. Is that level of fantastic? There is the one main guy that's from Big Trouble in Little China who plays the lead scientist guy. He's always fun, but I wouldn't call him a good actor. He's a good character actor. And in this movie, he's playing kind of a straight scientist dude, when in reality, you want to use him as a fun, wacky Asian character guy. The rest of it is so bad. I lost interest probably about 30 minutes in, and I never got my interest back. I think John Carpenter was either high on cocaine or drunk on a bender when he was writing and directing this. I don't understand how he watched the final cut and said, this is it. This is my movie. This is fantastic. This is what we're going with. Unless they just had like 20 grand and they're like, well, I'm out of money and I'm not going to put any more money into this turd. So here you go. I don't see how this is in any way related to the thing. I obviously the Mouth of Madness, I haven't seen that thing. It's gotta be better than this. I struggle to see any merit in this film. So I am going to lay this one at the feet of our guest and yourself, Daniel. You said it was a fun film, which I don't understand. There's an extended sequence by one of the characters where he is just trapped inside of a wall in a crawl space. And they're just trying to like dig him out with like a stick. Anyway, go ahead. That's all I got. I don't have a whole lot of thoughts about this thing because, anyway, go ahead.
I am shocked. I am shocked you don't like this movie.
And really,
it's so really good. Like, if you look at the thing, it's basically Prince of Darkness on ice.
No, get out of here. Shut your mouth. Shut your whore mouth. That is such a lie.
This is Carpenter. This is very Carpenter-esque. He's bringing the question of religion and science together, matter and antimatter. And he's bringing these philosophical questions to bear on what is going to be the destruction of humanity. And I thought that it was pretty well done. I mean, I did get a little bit lost in who was who, and there's not a whole lot of character development for anyone other than the first, main two or three characters. So that gets a little messy, but overall, I thought the premise was really great, and it does have like that eerie feel. And I think Carpenter has a pretty decent movie on his hands here. Prof CJ,
hold the fuck on. What was the point of the? At first, I thought it was cool when they were dreaming and they were shown this fuzzy image of the front of the church, and there's like a creepy dude standing there. At first I was like, oh, cool. Somebody from the future is like giving them these characters important information and that they're going to use this information to defeat the bad guy at the end. Is that what happened?
All right. That might've been a missed opportunity.
Was there any point to that at all?
Narratively, yes, but not for like a closing of a loop within the story.
What was the point of the people sending the information back? What was the information that they got sent?
It was a warning from the future of an apocalypse in the future. If they, failed to prevent the dark, evil anti-god or whatever from coming through to Earth, to our dimension or whatever.
You got to stop the green ooze from peeing on people. Okay.
Well, yeah.
Otherwise, we'll turn into Ninja Turtles. I wouldn't want to get peed on by it, but okay, I gotcha.
Brings a whole new definition to a wet market.
Okay. So
I also drew analogies to present day. I considered the basement of this church to be a lab of sorts, and they were dealing with forces that they did not understand, and it got out of hand and ended up being a potential risk for all of humanity. And it started driving the homeless folks crazy. They became NPC type zombies bent on menacing those who were trying to stop this thing and even murdering a few of them. And I thought that was very similar to what you might call NPCs who like masks or jabs and things like that, doing social pressure to try to force people to do things that they wouldn't otherwise choose to do on their own. And hence we have mandates and other unconstitutional and illegal things that should be ignored.
Can I reach and grab you anything, Daniel? You appear to be reaching for something. I just need to grab something for you if you need it.
No, I think I reached it. I think I reached it.
Okay, good.
So Robert doesn't like this film. So Prof. CJ, what's your rebuttal?
Okay. Now, I will say right off the bat, this is not my favorite Carpenter film, and I will admit that it objectively is not one of his best films. But personally, I would put it probably in my top five or six Carpenter films. And I think it's generally underrated. What I would say are the reasons I like this film. First off, I think it's a masterpiece of just creating a very ominous mood, like right at the opening credits, and then gradually ratcheting up the tension and the eeriness over the course of the movie. It starts off as a pretty slow-paced movie until maybe the last third or quarter or so. And I actually kind of like that. I actually like horror movies that are slower build as long as it's done well. And I think this one's actually done pretty well. I like the concept. I agree with Daniel on that the concept is cool. The whole idea of the apocalypse trilogy, that's something Carpenter has said in interviews and things. I've always thought that was kind of, I don't even know, sort of loose. It's basically just, oh, these are three movies that all in different ways deal with like an evil force coming to Earth to destroy it or whatever. But you know, I never took that literally as like, these are actually like sequel movies to each other, because they're clearly not. And in each of them, the evil is a bit different. In each of them, all the characters are totally different. The setting is totally different. So, you know, I just think that's the wrong way to think about it, is to take it too literally, as if this is like, you know, a Star Wars trilogy or something like that. More just that they're thematically related. I would say that it is it's one of my favorite Carpenter soundtracks too, by the way. I think both the movie and the soundtrack are masterpieces of minimalism. I think maybe the only Carpenter movie that does even better in terms of minimalism is Halloween itself. But this one, you know, it's on a pretty low budget. It was just a few million dollars. There's only a handful of settings. And I also would say, I think it does a very good job when it's gradually building the tension of also simultaneously closing in the characters, the protagonists, where it physically is getting closer and closer and more claustrophobic, which is another thing that also Halloween does pretty well. So I like that, the feeling of, you know, initially they can kind of walk outside the church a little bit, but then as the homeless people and things start to happen, you know, eventually they get to where they can't even really go out the door or the window. Some of those scenes I thought have good tension, where like the one guy lowers down and the homeless people close in on them and they pull them back in. Like a lot of those scenes, I think, do a good job of doing tension with relatively few, you know, things and people. I would absolutely agree that most of the actors in this movie are not good. Donald Pleasance is good. I like Victor Wong. I always like Victor Wong. He's the old Chinese guy from Big Trouble in Little China. I like him in this too, even though it's not as, you know, he was the old Chinese guy in Tremors. He was the old Chinese guy in Big Trouble in Little China. He was in Three Ninjas, which I haven't seen since I was like 11, but I loved it at age 11. I'm sure it would be terrible now. But I always like Victor Wong, and I like him in this too, even though it's more of a serious role for him. But, you know, other than Donald Pleasance and Victor Wong, Jameson Parker, who's Brian Marsh, I think is a competent actor. He's the guy who was also in The Fog. You know, I don't think he's a great actor, but I think he's decent. I think he's good enough. The rest of the actors in the movie are mostly crap. I'll agree to that. The dialogue. I like the script other than the dialogue. I think if you could improve the dialogue, you'd have an excellent, if you could improve the two things I would fix in this movie, they would make it a near perfect low budget 80s horror flick. Cause that's what this is. And that's what I'm judging it as. The two things I would fix to make this a near perfect low budget 80s horror flick are the dialogue and replace most of the actors.
Thank you.
But
yes,
I think those are the only two things that I think are really major problems. I think the premise is good. You know, everything else about the movie technically I think is good. And again, you know, I'm judging it for what it is, which is a pretty low budget 80s horror movie. And as a low budget 80s horror movie, I think it's head and shoulders above most of all the rest of the low budget 80s horror movies.
Well, what was the budget of The Thing? Because this, is there a reason why this movie looks way worse than The Thing?
The Thing was big budget, I believe.
Was it?
Yeah.
Didn't Carpenter say that that gave him a distaste for working with studios again? So he started going more independent.
Yeah. What happened was The Thing, you know, became a cult classic and loved and well-reviewed later. When it first came out, I think it was reviewed mostly pretty badly. And it lost money, I believe, at the box, or barely broke even. I forget which.
Get widespread appeal because of the gross out horror type elements, the body horror and that kind of thing. I thought that was what turned off most people.
I'm pulling it up right now. According to Wikipedia, The Thing's budget was 15 mil and the box office was 19.6 mil. So, you know, it made a slight profit, but apparently the studios were not happy with that. whereas Prince of Darkness is $3 million budget. So okay. The thing had five times the budget. So yeah, it's a different thing, pun intended.
Well, this movie looks so bad. The props are terrible. The lighting is very, very flat. All the characters look like they're on some 80s sitcom, like it's Facts of Life. They're just all lit so poorly that it was impossible for me to, you know, a lot of times when you watch a good horror movie, it's what you don't see that scares you. And I like the fact that this movie ratchets up the tension slowly. If you were into the movie, you would be along for this ride, I suppose. But there's only a few scenes really where they're going to hide the low budget. You need to hide the low budget in the darkness, buddy. You need to turn off the lights. You got to get the lighting going down and have it be a little bit more dramatic. I mean, you're in this kind of apocalyptic scenario. How some of the lights go out? The guy that gets turned into a bug or a bunch of bugs. At least they have one scene where he's out at night and you don't get to see all the terrible makeup. But when the lady turns into Satan or whatever, the makeup looks so terrible. And anything they're trying to do, the only thing that looks good in the entire film is the big vial of ooze. And it's because of the lighting. The lighting looks good going through that green liquid of some kind. But everything else is just atrocious. And I understand you got a low budget, but lighting isn't super expensive. I mean, maybe your director of photography or whoever's working on the lighting was their first day or something. I don't know. But man, it looks really bad.
Like the prop master on that Alec Baldwin movie?
Yeah, maybe. Probably. Same guy. But you're right. I mean, CJ's right. The dialogue is atrocious, and it's said by actors who are atrocious. Rewrite the dialogue. The premise is pretty cool. Like, I agree with you guys on the premise. Like, some scientists start dealing with some unknown shit that they don't know how to deal with, so they're trying to quantify it in ones and zeros and things like that. But the priest is the one that actually knows what's going on for the most part. And he knows how to deal with this situation, whereas these nerds are just don't believe it or whatever. That's kind of fun to play with, like belief versus disbelief, and do you actually see what's happening in front of your face, that kind of thing.
So, are you saying you would rather have the priest know more of what's going on? Because in the movie, the priest is almost as clueless as everybody else. Like he just found out about this secret thing in the basement and this, you know, secret order, you know, where at the beginning the old priest dies, who had been the guardian or whatever.
Oh, that's a different character? Okay. I thought there was just the one priest guy. I guess there's two priest guys.
Well, the very opening is one priest dying, right?
Yeah, it's like in the first minute of the credits or something.
I must have missed that part. Did he die? How did he die? Did the thing pee on him?
No.
Did he pee in his mouth?
I think it was natural causes. He was really old. He was older than Donald Pleasance.
But he's holding the box. And then Pleasance gets the box and goes to the church and opens up and all of that's like super creepy. And you're like, not sure what's going on. And they're cutting that between the university and the church and back and forth. And this is the merging of science and religion into this single narrative. Right. And it also even brings in the alien Jesus stuff, like ancient alien technology, the guy with the wild hair. I could see him like trying to explain some of these things in my head.
You know, another thing I really liked about this movie is I like the setting overall, the main setting of this dilapidated church in a dilapidated sort of LA slum. For some reason, I think Carpenter does really well when he's dealing with sort of like urban decay sort of settings. Like, you know, think of Escape from New York, think of, what do you call it? Shoot.
They Live.
Yeah. It's having a old man up past his bedtime. Brain malfunction. Yeah, They Live. That's what I was looking for. That's one of my top two or three favorite Carpenter films. So I'm ashamed that I couldn't think of the name, but yeah, I think he does very well with that as just sort of like a background, you know, just a very kind of simple, sparse urban decay background. And I don't know, there's something with this movie that I just always like the juxtaposition that like, you've got this ancient evil that's been around forever. And that the, you know, the secret order of the church has been, you know, hiding and containing for centuries and millennia and whatever, and that it's in the basement of an old semi-abandoned church in like a dilapidated part of LA. And then when you add in the creepy homeless people, that's another part of this movie I like, is the creepy homeless people that basically, you know, sort of function like zombies or something. I don't know. Those scenes. LA. Yeah, exactly. And those scenes, I don't know. They always creep me out.
Now, was that just like the ooze was becoming more powerful, starting to project its energy? And so anyone who was of a weaker, I don't know, constitution within proximity to it would turn into this kind of zombie thing? Or were we to believe that the whole world was being affected by this thing, and it's just these scientists who are slowly, one by one, kind of falling to it?
I think the thing with the homeless people is that they're, you know, probably all either mentally ill or really addicted to something or both. And so, yeah, kind of the first thing you said, that they're a little bit more vulnerable to the influence of the evil power. And so they sort of get, you know, possessed by it first. And then, you know, it has to actually, you know, piss in the mouth or whatever, to get people who are a little bit more together and with it and not so mentally ill, to be, you know, influenced by it. But, you know, I got to say too, another thing I like about this movie is that a lot of it is left kind of ambiguous. And I kind of like having horror movies where not everything is, you know, explained eventually in some exposition scene or whatever. I like the fact that so much of what goes on in this isn't really explained. And I don't know. I've just always liked horror movies and books that do that.
This is why I like The Shining and why Robert hates it.
Speaking of The Shining, it seemed to me that Carpenter was cribbing off of better movies when he made this movie. I mean, he had some extended scenes where somebody is writing, translating out some text, and then goes crazy and then just starts typing the same thing over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. And then, God, what was the other movie? Oh, The Thing, where he's cribbing off his own work, where some of the characters are not what they appear to be. They seem to be totally fine on the surface and normal, but then they're actually secretly like Satan's minions or whatever.
Right. That's why I was saying Prince of Darkness on Ice, The Thing.
Yeah, but this does not deserve to be mentioned in the same breath as The Thing, which is essentially a masterpiece, whereas this is like the leftover ideas that it's okay. It's not so much the ideas, it's the execution that is so poor that I have a big, huge problem with. And maybe if you remake this with a larger budget, competent acting, direction, script, everything, and maybe you can make something good out of this. But you know.
Yeah. Did you guys feel like there was this building tension and suspense, and it was a bit of a slow burn, but did you feel like, what was the threat? Like, I was kind of missing, what is the threat? Like, the ooze is sort of becoming more activated or whatever, and it's like spraying on people. But it didn't seem to have, I don't know, like a sense of purpose or a sense of danger related to it, like it was trying to accomplish something until the very end, you know, and then you see that birthing process of some parademon that's going to then go to the mirror and pull in the big badass demon from another dimension.
Yeah, I think what one of the things that kind of unites the Apocalypse trilogy is that they're all kind of Lovecraftian. They're all like taking a lot of H.P. Lovecraft concepts and themes and whatever, and, you know, dumping them into a modern setting. And so I think that part of what's going on is that, you know, a lot of it is being left ambiguous in some ways, like Lovecraft would do. But I always interpret it as there's this lesser evil that is represented by the ooze and then by the people that the ooze possesses. And that lesser evil is like a gopher for the bigger evil that's still on the other side in the other dimension or whatever. And so the lesser evil is trying to prepare the way to ultimately bring the big evil, you know, through the portal or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So this is the gain of function that we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Take the common cold and turn it into, you know, we all know.
Mm.
The unknown virus of unspecified origin.
I know nothing. The other thing I really could have appreciated more would have been like getting to know the particular characters, why they're relevant, what their specialization was, why they're there, and have that somehow play a role into what happens to them.
Yes. They were so faceless. They were nothing characters. They were cardboard cutouts that had no reason or purpose of being there other than they were just generic scientist people.
Yeah, they're the red shirts beaming down with the away team.
Yeah, there was even like a romance between two of them that I didn't buy for a second. And then there was a makeout session at the end that was completely unearned. But whatever. I mean, who cares?
For whatever reason, it seems like John Carpenter thinks that Jameson Parker must be like the most sexy man alive, because doesn't he also, like, with almost no effort, seduce Jamie Lee Curtis in The Fog? And then, you know, he seduces this redhead with like really awkward lines and whatever in this. It's like Carpenter must just think this guy is, you know, a sex machine or something.
It's the mustache. That initial dialogue between those two on the bench, I thought it was like coming off as real rapey. And then she was like, I need to leave. And then he's like, oh, just start over. And I thought that was going to be the end of their romance, but apparently that wasn't enough. That was like just the foreplay. They're like totally going to get it on.
He's got some nuclear pheromones or something.
So you read that as rapey. I might need to rewatch just that portion, because to me it seemed kind of woke, like she was getting offended at a joke and maybe was going a little bit too far in her being offended.
Yeah, I mean, I interpreted it as he was trying to be kind of like in jest or sarcastic or whatever, like not, you know, being literal, but she was taking it literally. And that's why he then kind of did the reset and got serious. That's, I don't know. That's how I interpret it.
Yeah, I felt he was just being like macho asshole rapey guy. And she was justifiably going, I don't need any of this right now. I can leave. See ya.
Okay.
Why she gave him a second shot, I don't know. But
well, she seemed to have been dating that other guy, and maybe that's why he felt he needed to be, you know, more macho-y.
Maybe. I don't know. Is that romance in the 80s? I don't remember romance being that poorly written. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
In a lot of 80s horror movies, I think it is.
Okay.
Especially with a low budget.
Fair enough.
Have you seen Friday the 13th movies?
Yeah, but at least those are teenagers, and you're just like, well, they're horny teenagers. You don't need to actually have dialogue. They're just going to go off in the woods and bang. Who cares?
Yeah.
They play it off like they're smart adults. Like, if you're going to have your main characters be scientists, write them so that they're maybe awkward and nerdy instead of Mr. Rapey asshole guy. I don't know.
Yeah. Another minor complaint I have is that.
Now, why is he so jacked? Nerdy guy so jacked?
Well, most of the scientists are actually supposed to be graduate students, and yet they all look like they're about 40.
Yeah.
You know, which, I mean, occasionally there is someone that age who's, you know, working on a graduate degree, but I mean, for the most part, it's usually people like in their 20s. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, mm-hmm. that's another criticism of the casting, other than most of them are crappy actors, is, you know, they should have been looking for people at like 25.
Yeah, cast younger, but well, they couldn't.
Yeah, I remember in college, I'd always noticed those students who returned like 10 or 15 years later. They always stood out, and they were always the ones that were like asking the most annoying questions.
A lot of them, though, are actually good students, at least in my experience.
Probably because they ask the questions and do the readings.
Yeah, they ask the questions.
The annoying ones that know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're actually not there just to get high and get laid.
What?
I know.
That's what college is all about.
Yeah, so that was sold for a very high price, I might add.
That's right.
It's only
200 grand to get laid and get drunk. What?
Yeah, it's like
fair trade.
Three or four times the price now, and it's only been, what, 20 years? Yeah, anyway. So one other thing that sort of stood out to me was the professor, Egg, from Big Trouble in Little China, he just orders his students to go and sleep at this church and, like, do what? He doesn't even tell them. And so I don't understand, I guess, from a story aspect, you've brought all these scientists together, students and other people, and just told them to bring their gear and just do stuff, but not any particular thing. They're not looking for anything in particular. There doesn't seem to be any coordinated effort or plan as presented in why they're even there.
Yeah. And the audience is equally aware of what is actually happening. At least that's what I was, when they were saying, hey, I don't even know what I'm doing here. I'm like, me neither.
They're there to do sciencey stuff. Duh.
But they just have a random selection of cardboard cutout characters that don't have any special talents or anything. Like, there's no character development, like Daniel was saying. Like, you don't learn anything about any of the characters, so they don't have any kind of an arc or any at all, and they don't have any special abilities that come into play. It would have been nice to see any of that.
But. Yeah, I mean, there's a tiny bit, like the one lady is a translator or whatever like that. You know, there's a few little things here and there. But yeah, for sure, they don't lay out, you know, what all them, the one lady, the other lady is like a radiologist or something. And I guess she's trying to figure out if the ooze is nuclear and whether or not it might create some Ninja Turtles or whatever.
All right, yes, yeah, that would be a much better movie.
Yeah, and then the other
especially
one...
if Vanilla Ice raps at the end.
Yes, thank you. You've already written a way better movie.
And she carbon dated the thing, right? So it was like
Prince of Darkness.
It was, it was even older than biblical times, right? It was like what? How old did she say? Like 10?
Yeah, I forget. I thought it was hundreds of thousands or millions or something. Yeah, really old.
Okay, all right. Well, have we exhausted this movie already?
Oh, you said you had so many notes, Daniel. Come on now.
It's a pretty simple movie, you know, love it or hate it. But, you know, I was saying in my messages back and forth with Daniel regarding this one versus In the Mouth of Madness, I said, I actually personally like this one better, but there is more to talk about on In the Mouth of Madness just because it's a more complicated movie. You know, In the Mouth of Madness is better script and, you know, better, more complicated story and, you know, a little bit more character depth and whatever. This movie, I don't know, I just always love this one just aesthetically from the standpoint of the minimalism, the tone. I love the soundtrack. I love the slowly ratcheting up tension and I love the premise. So I don't know. I guess I just love it for what it is. It's like a really simple garage band song or something like that, but it's like a good garage band song. And I don't know, or maybe think about it like it's, you know, if John Carpenter is one of your favorite bands, it's like this is one of his lesser known bootleg records or whatever.
This is the B side that didn't make it to the album.
Yeah. Yeah. Where if you're a real, if you're just a Carpenter junkie, it's got so many Carpenter elements in them, you know, maybe not quite as well executed as in The Thing or Halloween. You know, it's obviously a totally different movie from Big Trouble in Little China, 'cause it doesn't have all that comedy. But I don't know. I've just always, it's been one of my, it's like the cult classic of cult classics in terms of Carpenter's work.
It's the niche of the niche.
Yeah, and it's still way better than Ghosts of Mars, Vampires, you know, Memoirs of an Invisible Man, which is hard to believe that's actually even a Carpenter film. Like, to me, this one feels like a Carpenter film right off the bat. You know, you got the music, the font, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah, the music is very iconic. I mean, him doing the music in all his, in most of his movies is unmistakable. Actually, the Vampires, though, I remember seeing that in the theater and I felt violated. I thought that was atrocious.
Yeah, that's a bad one. Ghost of Mars is even worse.
Mm.
Yeah. Don't watch that.
So people see those if they're completionists and also masochists, right?
Yeah. I mean, skip it for Escape from New York, The Thing, Big Trouble in Little China, They Live.
Those now, supposedly Carpenter, he's still working? Like, he released a Halloween movie this year? Just now? Just recently?
He didn't really do anything on it. He basically, this Halloween movie and the one from, was it 2017, 2018? He basically just like lets them put his name on it as some sort of executive producer or whatever and like that. And he gets a check. He's even in interviews, but he's been very cynical in interviews about these Halloween sequels. He's basically like, yeah, I just get paid to let them use it and have his name on it or whatever. But he doesn't really have anything to do with it. He hasn't actually personally directed a movie since The Ward, which was like 15 years ago or something like that. All he does these days is music. He's like touring around, you know, he's making albums, those Lost Theme albums, which are really good. And then he like tours around playing live. And I think he's got like his sons are in his band or whatever. And supposedly it's like a fun show to go to or whatever. So he's really just sort of had it with Hollywood and movies and whatever. He's just going around playing music.
Good on him.
But honestly, I would love to see him make one more good movie just because his last few movies weren't that good. I just feel like, come on, man, like go out, pull one more, take whatever meth and Adderall and whatever other things they're giving Joe Biden, shoot yourself up with that, you know, to the gills and miraculously crank out one more movie on like the level of The Thing. You know, that would be great. But
that would be great. But yeah, he's 73 years old now. That's a lot of an old man.
He's been a chain smoker his whole life, and he's looked like he's 73 years old since about 1979. So I don't know. Then again, he might pull a Keith Richards and just keep going. Forever.
Just live for another 20 years. Why not?
Sell your soul.
Get that adrenochrome.
I hear it's does wonders for wrinkles, smooths out your skin, all that good
stuff. Oh, nice. Nice. Where can I get some of that? Is that just at the local supplement store?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. So any final notes before we get into how many nameless, faceless characters die off out of 10?
How many Carpenter red shirts die? I got no notes. I didn't take a single note in this movie other than to say, I am bored.
Okay. All right. That's too bad. I was watching it with an eye to relating it to, you know, current times. And so I was kind of filling in a few gaps and a few blanks in here with this merging of religion and science and experimentation and man's hubris and hiding something that they probably should have been more aware of sooner to avert catastrophe.
Mm.
But there are a lot of unearned things in this, like the lady at the end who just pushes the demonly possessed person through the mirror and she goes with it. There's no like lead up to why she would do that. You know, there's not a lot of setups and payoffs
mm-hmm.
in this movie. It's just like things kind of just happen. We've got some random people that we don't really know much about them. Some of them are turned bad, but you don't really know that, or the audience knows that, but the character doesn't know that. So there's a little bit of like, oh, don't look behind the corner there, whatever. But beyond that, I think it's just a lot of elements that just aren't quite executed quite right. There's that ambiance. There is the music and good things in it. But I feel like it just doesn't totally mesh together, which is a bit too bad.
I think this movie is a prime candidate for a remake by maybe some diehard Carpenter fan that wants this to be better.
I'd be terrified.
Some good ideas.
I'd be terrified of a remake just because with today's Hollywood, it would end up being yet another piece of woke propaganda with wokeism shoehorned into every other scene. So that would be my main concern. If you could actually find a director who's competent at this type of movie, who's not willing to go along with that crap, then yes, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard that The Eternals, which is, I guess, out now, is just saddled with that stuff.
Mm.
And even reviewers are like, too much.
Even the reviewers?
Yeah.
Oh, it must be really bad if the reviewers are turned off by it.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, I'm absolutely terrified and depressed about the alleged upcoming Indiana Jones movie. I have no hope. Yeah. I have no hope for that one.
I can't see how you could.
Yeah, he's what, almost 80? And I guess he took a fall and threw his shoulder out or broke his shoulder. So he had to go on hiatus.
Doing action scenes at his age? I don't understand.
He should be running for president.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, just getting out of bed is an action scene for him at that age.
Yeah. I don't see why they need to involve Ford at all in that franchise. If you're going to continue the franchise, and I know they tried to give to Shia LaBeouf, but I'm sure there are plenty. I mean, didn't they want Chris Pratt to take it on or somebody? I'm sure there's any number of young leading male Hollywood guys that would love to be the next Indiana Jones.
Like do the full on reboot kind of thing.
Sure.
Like they do every 3 years with Spider-Man and Batman.
Why not? I mean, I know Harrison Ford is iconic in that role, but there are other good actors. It's not like Indiana Jones is the sacred film series that can't be touched. I mean, if you're going to talk about remaking the movies, I'm like, well, they don't need to be remade, but you can continue on the series with different actors. Yes.
You know, they did that. What was it? Young Indiana Jones TV series or whatever. And that was actually pretty decent, but that was like 30 years ago. They made that.
Yeah. That was a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Get remember. That guy to come back. He'd be the right age now.
No, Daniel, no, you cast like a 25, 30 year old guy to be Indiana Jones now. If you really want to do it, I'd rather than make a new IP, but Hollywood doesn't have new ideas. So they're just going to recycle the same stuff that's guaranteed to make money.
You're not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You're not wrong. Though I think your hate for this movie might be a bit harsh.
Good. Good. It deserves it. Or doesn't deserve it. But either way, I don't like it.
Okay, well, let's get your final summary review and a number of red shirt, nameless, faceless scientists and or homeless people that die.
No, that live, right?
That live.
Okay, that live. Because only there's only very few that deserve to live. So, okay. Yeah, I it's, you know, I'm a John Carpenter fan. It's true. We did They Live, which I think is a great movie. The Thing, of course, is fantastic. I haven't seen Halloween in some time, but I don't dislike that series. Once he got into the 90s, though, yeah, like Vampires and I think a few other films maybe that I saw of his, I thought he was losing what it was that made him interesting. But in this thing, yeah, you got some decent ideas that utterly fails in execution. Maybe he thought that he could do Robert Rodriguez and make a really nice film for shoestring budget, but I just don't see it. None of that money showed up on screen. I don't know where it went. Up everybody's noses. It's probably not even enough to get them that high for very long. I don't know, but it looks terrible. It's acted terribly. The dialogue is atrocious. If John Carpenter's name wasn't attached to this thing, it would be a forgotten, even more forgotten than it is, forgotten movie that you would dig. There used to be, you go to a supermarket like about 10 years ago as DVDs were dying, and there would be this giant bin full of budget DVDs for like 99 cents or compilation discs, and you'd get like five movies you've never heard of for like $2 or something like that. And it would be down there in the bottom of that bin, and or there'd just be like a pile of them because no one would have bought it. I don't understand the love for the film. I'm glad that CJ likes it. I'm glad that somebody out there likes it, because, you know, everybody deserves to be liked in some way, I suppose. But I wish this movie was better. It's just poorly executed. So I don't think anybody should watch it. I don't recommend anybody watch it. If you have fond memories or you're a Carpenter completionist, sure, you subject yourself to this. But I don't think more than... There's two surviving red shirts. One person that's like bleeding, but they're going to be okay. And then the other red shirt has got like an arm ripped off, and they're just dragging one leg as they're limping along out of the building. And you know, they're not going to make it. So just, it's more like one and a half.
Just a flesh wound.
I mean, if she's the Black Knight, then she's going to live just fine. And it's two, but otherwise, no.
Okay. One and a half.
Yeah. One harsh. Harsh. But that's how much enjoyment I got out of this.
Okay. That might be your second lowest score. I think you gave a zero to something that we watched a couple of
This
months
movie
ago.
Doesn't deserve a zero. On premise alone, you get a point. Maybe 2 points, but everything else, maybe it had 2 points. Maybe it had 3 points, but then the execution killed the other point and a half. Yeah, that's what did it. It wasn't the slime, it was the execution that killed the people.
Okay. All right. Well, CJ, let's get your final summary and your score. How many surviving red shirts make it through this one alive?
Okay. Yeah. I will admit this is, you know, objectively not a great movie. And, you know, Carpenter has a lot of cult classics. I think Escape from New York, The Thing, Big Trouble in Little China, They Live. I think all these could reasonably be called cult classics. And then Prince of Darkness is like, to me, is, I don't know, a double cult. It's like a cult squared sort of a thing. If you like Prince of Darkness, you are the group within the group in terms of Carpenter fans, I think. So it's where you separate the casual Carpenter fans from the real Carpenter fans. And I'll admit, you know, if I was to judge this thing purely objectively, I'd give it a C. I'd give it 7 out of 10. But subjectively, from my own, you know, preferences and aesthetics and all that, just looking at it as a piece of aesthetics, I got to give it at least an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
8 out of 10, I would say. And again, that's with my tastes and also judging it for what it is, which again is a pretty low budget 80s horror movie. And there's like zillions of those out there. And it's better than 95% of those. I would say, of, okay. of low budget 80s horror movies. It's better than most of them. And again, there's enough redeeming qualities there that I still enjoy watching it. I usually watch it once a year around Halloween time. And one of my favorite Carpenter soundtracks, even though it's not nearly as, you know, known and remembered as Halloween or something like that. But yeah, no, I'm a fan.
Okay,
I admit the dialogue and most of the actors need to be replaced. I totally agree with that.
Okay, but relative to the other films in its cohort, you're giving it a higher relative score. So you're, the professor's grading on a curve tonight, folks.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. And I'll say one more thing, too, which is I love Halloween, and Halloween deserves to be, you know, considered a classic and all that. But if you actually go watch Halloween with a purely cold, objective eye, there's a lot of problems with it. There's a lot of problems with it. But one thing I think it nails that Prince of Darkness also nails is mood, tone, minimalism, and sort of the combination of slowly building tension with, I don't know, just these very simple little scenes that, at least for me, create a whole lot of tension and suspense.
Okay. All right. So we have the matter and the antimatter, the two opposing forces, the high end and the low end.
I would say that if I gave a shit about any of the characters, whether they lived or died, there might have been some tension for me, but I just didn't know them enough to even care.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm glad somebody likes this movie. I am, truly.
So I'm going to be right in between you guys. I liked the movie. I liked the aesthetic. I liked the premise. I liked seeing a lot of the same actors as from Big Trouble in Little China, even Dennis Dunn. And I thought that his sort of subtle gay jokes were kind of fun, like when he was saying that he was in the closet, and there's a couple of other things that he said that I think might in present day be quote unquote problematic. But the execution just isn't quite there. The character development just isn't quite there. So I'm going to go like with a 6 on this. I enjoyed watching it and likening it to present day things. But overall, it's not like that great of a film. I am actually looking forward to seeing In the Mouth of Madness, though, just because it not a direct, you know, trilogy, but since it's in the same or similar vein and that it has made a more indelible mark in culture, I want to check that one out as well. And perhaps next year we should do Halloween, Robert. We have not yet done that movie.
It's true. We have not done the classic. We haven't done any classic like slasher films, have we?
No, I guess we're just saving all those for Snobby Bobby. He does those types of films for his podcast, the Not For Everyone podcast. And by the way, he is a huge fan of In the Mouth of Madness.
Mm. Well, I grew up being a big fan of Freddy Krueger. I wasn't a big Jason fan because he didn't have any personality, but I like Krueger a whole lot. So maybe we could do some Nightmare on Elm Street or something like that, maybe.
Yeah, Krueger was personality plus. And I think, what was it? Three was Dream Warriors. That he had all those inventive ways of offing them.
Yeah. I thought Dream Warriors was great back in the day. I don't know if it's any good anymore, but back in the day, that was one of my favorite films.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe next year we'll do a Freddy and Halloween and other such horror films. And we're going to actually, even though this is coming out on Halloween or shortly thereafter, we're going to extend it. We're going to bleed into November a little bit for next week, as we bring on James Gentleman of the Black Rock Podcast to talk about Beetlejuice with starring Batman and Gina Davis.
Yeah. The first time I was exposed to Michael Keaton and he exposed himself to me. It was great.
Yeah. So it's going to be showtime next week when we do that one.
That's right. And,
that's a movie I haven't seen in a long time, but another director who has a lot of clever visuals with Tim Burton. So I think that that would be another fun one and a bit nostalgic as I had not seen Prince of Darkness before, you know, this week, but I've seen Beetlejuice back when I was a kid and a few times since. And I think that'll be a really good discussion.
Yeah. And Winona Ryder pre shoplifting days.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Kleptomania.
Yeah. That's right. Good. Yeah. Get tripped into the afterlife, all kinds of fun stuff in that movie.
Yeah.
Ever singing Deo. It's good.
All right. You give me a good
banana song
for next week.
It's the banana boat song, right?
Yeah, Deo. And then One Day Only at the Bon Marché. Remember the ads, the local ads for that?
Yes, indeed. One Day Only, the Bon Marché.
Yeah, true. One Day Only sale. Prost CJ, this is going to be lost on you, but they got bought up by Macy's. They were a local chain in Seattle, like department store. And they had that same song, Dale.
One day sale.
Wow. Yep. Almost as good as the Cal Worthington car ads. Those were fun too. I don't know if you remember those. But
you have to refresh my memory on that.
Oh, I'll try to find an old YouTube video. I'll send it to you.
Okay.
But Prof. CJ, thanks again for coming on. I hope you can stick around for a little bit longer for some of the bonus content. I know it is getting late for you and you're an old man, but just remind people where they can find your work, and we will get out of here soon.
Sure thing. It's the Dangerous History Podcast. You can find it at dangeroushistorypodcast.com, or just go to whatever favorite podcatcher you like to use for podcasts and put in Dangerous History Podcast and you will find it.
All right. And it is really good. I highly recommend it. And also get in on his Patreon. He does a lot of bonus content as well, which is always really good, as on top of the stuff that he hands out for free.
Yeah, I recently did a bonus episode on a document from the Chinese Cultural Revolution called 100 Items for Destroying the Old and Establishing the New. And I shared some excerpts from that and dissected it, and also compared aspects of it to modern day wokeism, which has a pretty strong Maoist streak running through it.
Yeah, and I heard that Facebook might be changing its name to Metaverse. So that document you were just referencing might be serving as their mission statement.
Most likely.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again, everyone. And we'll be back next week with the great James Gentleman of Blackbird Podcast for Beetlejuice. And with that, we'll say happy Halloween, everyone. Peace out and see you next week. All right, just a few more minutes on the Actual Anarchy Podcast. I don't know what I've really saved for this portion, so we can probably get into the Kathleen Turner Overdrive before too long. But Robert, you mentioned the guy who played Egg in Big Trouble in Little China, but did you notice the other guy, the other Asian guy, was also from Big Trouble in Little China?
So he was the martial arts guy?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, he looked familiar. And now that you mention it,
he's a terrible actor in both films.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, and he's not very good
for some reason. And I don't think he was in very many movies over the course of his career, obviously, cause he's not a very good actor, but for some reason I always liked him. Like I always thought he was a terrible actor, but I found him very likable. So I don't know. I can tolerate his bad acting a little bit more than the other bad actors who are not likable. So,
Yeah. I liked him a lot as well, like in that affectionate likability kind of way, because he was Jack Burton's, you know, best friend in Big Trouble. But his acting even in that was not good. He was like, come on, Jack. Come on, man.
Yeah, he's bad, but he seems to be trying hard, which I guess I give him a few points for. I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
He's at least somewhat memorable.
He's more memorable than the other cardboard cutouts in this film. Although the redheaded girl, I kind of liked her a little bit, but that's for other reasons.
She had that terrible like mid to late 80s haircut. Oh, it's almost like a semi mullet that
it's a female mullet. It's not good.
Mid to late 80s female mullet thing. Yeah. didn't age well. Didn't look good at the time. Looks even worse now.
Yeah, it wasn't doing her any favors, but maybe that's why she didn't appear too attractive at first, but I don't know. Once you cut out the hair, I think she's
oh yeah. I think she'd be attractive with a different haircut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've noticed that in a lot of movies from this day and age, or the '80s period, and even into the '90s. But then if they like get their hair wet, like in a beach scene or a shower scene, then you're like, oh yeah, they're actually like pretty attractive when their, you know, hair is like out of the way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then
the 80s. So much hairspray.
Separately, my wife and I started watching an HBO documentary on the Heaven's Gate cult with the Marshall Applewhite guy.
The tennis shoe and the cutting off the balls guy?
Yeah. And they were following the Hale-Bopp comet.
Catch right on the comet, yeah.
Yeah. So we're about halfway through it, and they were also doing very similar style haircuts to the redheaded girl in this.
And, you know, it's also similar to the haircut that on Spinal Tap, that Nigel haircut on Spinal Tap is very, very similar to that. It's like he was ahead of his time. He was doing that, like, what was Spinal Tap, like 81 or something?
Yeah,
that's a great like movie too. Yeah, we got to do Spinal Tap, man.
That's so a fun movie.
So many movies, so little time. Mm. Well, I think that's a good wrap here. So check out Prof. CJ's work at Dangerous History Podcast. And we'll be back next week for James Gentleman with, what is it? We're doing Beetlejuice. And you find the show notes and more for this episode at actualanarchy.com/258. And do give us some Patreon dollars and we will give you some pre-show and post-show bonus content. Go to actualanarchy.com/258. And Robert, the final word.
Daniel, how long are you going to keep that stash? You got to keep it for at least another week.
It's
got to get to be uncomfortable. I want it to be painful for you somehow.
Oh, it's already uncomfortable. In fact, I did this yesterday and the kids and the wife had gone to the park and then they came home and my kids were like, who's that guy? There's a weird, strange guy in our house. They were talking about me with the mustache.
Yeah. You know, when I was growing up, for the first, I don't know, 4 years of my life or whatever, my dad had a big mustache. And then one day he shaved it off. And I don't really remember this, but my mom says I completely flipped out the first time he walked in with no mustache, because I had never seen him in my life without a mustache. I thought he was some sort of crazy, like, stranger or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's those videos on YouTube about babies being showed their fathers shaved and unshaved, and they burst into tears. Like, who is this monster? I don't know.
Yeah, you think it's an imposter. It's a body snatcher type thing.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what masks are doing to these kids.
Oh, nothing. It's fine.
Yeah.
Shut up, you conspiracy theorist.
I know. Crazy alt-right. Wackadoodle.
Insurrectionist.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it here. I was going to make fun of Robert's dad, who also had a mustache most of the time and then cut it off.
Yeah.
And looked very different.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. Yep. Yeah, he rocked that thing for at least a decade, maybe more, maybe 2 decades. Like his entire teaching career. I don't know what it is about teachers and mustaches. They just, like, go cops. Teachers, I don't know, does it look like you have more authority or something? I don't know. Like, maybe he thought he had too much of a baby face when he was young, because, you know, when you first start teaching, you're not a whole lot older than the people you're teaching. Mm-hmm. Like, my sister was teaching when she was like 20, 21, 22, and you're teaching like high school kids, like 17, 18 year olds. You gotta feel like, you know, you gotta establish dominance in that room. And I think that's probably why he grew that mustache, gets a little more authority. I don't know. That's just a speculation on my part.
And what's the deal with, like, the stash used to be a porn star thing, but doesn't seem to be anymore.
Yeah. What happened to the old stash?
That used to,
the, like, rise and fall.
That was a cliche. The porn stash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do recall that being a cliche. I haven't seen a recent porn, so I don't know if it's fallen in or out of favor.
Me neither, but I've heard. So
the rumors are.
Yeah, yeah, the rumors.
This guy I know who watches it, yeah.
All right, well, let's end it there before we reveal too much, and we'll get into some Kathleen Turner Overdrive, and we'll see you guys all next week for Beetlejuice. Peace out, everyone. Maximum freedom.
Chipmunks. CHIPMUNK. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Do, 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 do.